I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, friends, so here's the game.
Name that movie.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give you a famous movie quote, and you have to tell me which movie it's from, and you also have to tell me who the character was. That's it.
Okay. I think I might be able to name the movie, but there's no way I'm going to know the character.
No, listen, I set this game up. It's easier than you think, I promise. I'll say, Luke, I am your father. And
okay.
You'll say...
Someone's doing impressions on the pod is what I would say.
Well, listen, I'm damn near forced into them, okay?
I would say Star Wars Darth Vader.
Ding, ding, ding. Okay. See, it's easy, okay? Ready?
Okay, I'm just not that confident. I feel like I'm being set up.
No,
do the movie?
No. No, we cannot just do the movie because I made the game.
Okay.
You are in the passenger seat, mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll tell you this. You can say the actor, right? If it's Star Wars and Darth Vader, you can say what?
James Earl Jones.
Don't get too long. This is not going to go well for you.
I fully blacked out. I blacked out. That's how nervous I am.
Wait, the first one is pretty easy. You're going to get this one easy.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
Molly, you in danger, girl.
That is Whoopi Goldberg, Ghost.
Okay,
I don't know what her character's name was, but that's definitely Whoopi.
Okay, I'll give you that. Ding, ding.
Yes, but you said.
No, I'm giving it to
okay.
She's a,
you were reluctant. You were like, well, I guess. Sir, I told you I wasn't going to know the character. I don't know the character's name.
Okay, I gave it to you. Okay. The only thing I gave it to you is because, like, I had to look it up too.
Okay, thank you.
It's Oda Mae Brown.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Blackest southern name you ever heard of. Oda Mae Brown.
Oda Mae, no way.
Okay. All right, next one.
My precious.
Ooh, Gollum, right?
Uh-huh.
From Lord of the Rings.
Oh, good job. Good job.
I haven't even seen that movie.
ready?
It's alive. It's alive.
This is a trick one because of the movie is Frankenstein, I think, but I don't think Frankenstein says who says that. I don't know. I don't know this one.
Oh gosh, I thought I had real faith in you for a minute.
What
there.
Is this one?
Because it is a little tricky. It's Frankenstein, yes, but who says it is Dr. Frankenstein.
See, that's that. I was there, but not fully there.
I have no idea who that actor is, so we're gonna.
Yeah, I don't know who that man is.
I hope I don't sound ridiculous. I don't know who this man is. I mean, he could be walking down the street. I wouldn't know a thing. Sorry to this man.
Okay, two more.
You can't handle the truth.
Oh, okay. That is a movie. That is a movie where it's like he's wearing a, what is that called? He's in the service. He's wearing.
Yes, you go. Keep
he is. I don't. Oh, he's very angry. I don't know. I don't know what the movie is.
He's on the stand.
Oh, he is.
Demi Moore's
stand.
In it.
Oh my God! Wait. A Few Good Men.
I am so proud of you. I am so proud of you. Who is the actor? I don't know. You're never gonna get
Charlie
the character.
Charlie Sheen. Martin Sheen. Martin Sheen.
No, no. Oh, Cook. Nice, though. Nice, though. Jack Nicholson.
Oh, God damn. I see. But they're same, in the same yeah, world. Yeah. You know,
I'm giving it to you.
When the casting director really wants Jack Nicholson, he can't get him. He goes to Martin Sheen.
I just want to make this about me for a second and give me, I have so much empathy because as you're doing it, I'm experiencing so much.
I feel
so excited when you got that.
Delon, can I just tell you, I feel like I'm taking the fucking ACTs and my future is on the line. I'm like, if I fuck this up, I'm never going to amount to anything. That's how I feel right now.
You'll never be able to breathe again. We'll take your WGA card away. Okay, last one. Ready?
Okay.
South Central does it like nobody does.
Ooh. South Central does it. I don't know. I'm going to just guess. I feel like maybe it's from Boys in the Hood.
Oh, not bad. Not a bad guess. It's actually a trick question. This is how we do it.
This is how we do it.
Ooh, wait. No, no, no.
Listen. Wait.
I hate you for that.
Let me fix it. Hello and welcome back to Let Me Fix It, the podcast that says John Travolta was a certified hottie, and I dare you to say that he motherfucking wasn't, okay?
Okay, I'm gonna cut you.
I'm Francesca Ramsey. I'm an actress, a producer, a writer, and a former graphic designer.
And I'm DeLon Grant. I'm an actor, a singer, a photographer, and a writer. And Fran, what do you think about this being our first Let Me Fix It podcast episode about a film?
Shout out to us for launching a podcast in the midst of the actors and writers' strike and not crossing that picket line by talking about struck work. That said, we do have a bunch of films for future episodes on our list. Class, we keep a running list of potential pod topics. So, like we always say, if you would like to suggest a TV show, a celeb, a brand, or a movie that we should fix on a future episode, hit us up on Instagram at fixitpod or email us letmefixitpod@gmail.com.
And guys, we also haven't done any TV shows yet.
That is wild, but very exciting news. DeLon is cooking up an episode about TGIF.
TGIF.
For those of you that remember or don't remember, TGIF was ABC's Friday night programming in the 90s and early 2000s.
And I would like the record to show that I also wrote this episode, and I wrote that friends said early 2000s instead of the phrase she can't be bothered to say. Mm. Not that I wasn't tempted, but I let it go.
Yeah. Did you let it go? If you mention it, then you, by definition, have not let it go. But I would also like the record to show that you should not get credit for using the right word instead of the wrong word.
You know, I just slipped it in the back end. You know, that's how we do.
I do not consent. I do not consent to that word being on this pod, okay?
Right. One of the reasons I think it's valuable for us to discuss and fix movies, TV shows, is because I think everything deserves critique. Everything is up for constructive criticism and should be. It's about being discerning for me and asking more of the stories that we're telling. And the more popular something is, the more I think we should be discerning about what it's adding to the culture, you know?
Mm. Thank you for saying discerning twice. I didn't hear you the first time. The more that I think about it, I'm going to say discerning is a $50 word.
Thank you very much.
It is. It just adds a little je ne sais quoi to the sentence. So
what do you say? It just has a little gravitas.
Gravitas. Yes, it really has a little bit of weight. I agree with you. Film, TV, music, media, they all shape our cultural consciousness. And critique in that respect is very important, especially when we look back on what society deemed great. So today we are going back in the timeline to discuss 1989's blockbuster hit, Look Who's Talking, starring Kirstie Alley and John Travolta. Now, if you have not seen this movie, do not worry, because we will do a little recap along with diving into its history and do some discerning to figure out why it was such a hit. And then DeLon and I will do our best to fix it by fan casting a modern day reboot. So let's dive in. Look Who's Talking. Let Me Fix It. So I put a few notes here because, DeLon, you suggested that we do this movie. I had another pitch. I won't spoil it. But why did you suggest this movie? Did you watch it as a kid?
You know, I was just thinking about like being excited about film and TV and how we haven't done on the pod. And I did watch it as a kid. And it is one of those films in my mind that's kind of seared visually, films of visual media. We'll get into some of the reasons why the images are so iconic and and some of the ways in which they made those images, created them. But I do remember it just being on HBO all the time when I was a kid.
You
I was
had at my HBO?
Grandmother's my grandmother did. Nana
oh.
did. She sure did. I would be at her house and it would always be on HBO.
Okay.
Do you remember this movie?
Okay, so I do remember this movie, but I have a more of a vivid memory of Look Who's Talking 2 and Look Who's Talking Now.
We were a little older by that point, yeah.
Those are the ones that I really remember. I remember like the elements of the original, but when I started watching it, I was like, oh, okay, some of this stuff feels familiar. Mm. But I don't know. I genuinely had not thought about this movie in years.
I had neither, and I don't know what put it in the brain hole, but I was like, oh, that feels like it
the brain hole.
The brain hole. You know what I mean? It's like something that gets there and you're like, I don't know how that got there, but it's stuck and I can't let it go. Anyway, so Look Who's Talking landed in theaters, class, in the fall of 1989, and it stars John Travolta, who most of us know from the iconic turn as Danny Zuko in the movie musical Grease. Fran, do you remember what the big song was from Grease?
I do remember. Summer loving had me a blast. Summer loving. I also remembered that every high schooler in that movie looked a smooth 45 years old.
Easy.
When I watched that movie as an adult, I'm like, how in the world did any of these people pass as teenagers?
Listen, Hollywood was tricking us. Hollywood was like, we get to tell you what looks like what, right? I actually meant, now that we're saying it, like there are a bunch of songs from Grease.
So many.
It's an iconic movie, but I was thinking, we go together like
this move, which is a very sexual move.
Listen, I don't know what you're talking about.
If we're being honest, the innuendos don't stop on this pod.
Nor should they ever.
No.
I'm sorry. So Look Who's Talking also starred Kirstie Alley, whom we all know from her 6 years she spent in the late 80s and early 90s playing Rebecca Howe on the hit NBC sitcom Cheers. The film was built as a vehicle for Travolta and Alley because they were megastars at the time. But I didn't know this, Fran. You kind of popped this into the doc. That Ally was starring on Cheers and she hadn't proven herself, the studios were saying.
I mean, this is one of those like really dumb things where like she was very successful on Cheers, but the studios were like, but can she open a movie?
She's a TV actress.
She's a TV actress,
God,
which again, it's
God.
So dumb. And then Travolta, while he had been very successful, he had just come off of a string of like flops. And it's that thing that Hollywood does to unfortunately actors, writers of all backgrounds, where they oftentimes will be like, well, that thing didn't do well, so now in our minds, we're not sure if you have what it takes. But it's like, it might not be his fault that the movie didn't do well. Like, and flop is relative. So it's really interesting that before the movie was coming out, the studios were nervous and they actually really leaned on the baby aspect of the film in the marketing rather than pushing John Travolta and Kirstie Alley as the stars, because they thought like, we got to trick people into seeing this movie.
That's so nuts, because like were you going to put DeLon and Francesca in it, right? Randos?
They
obviously bring cachet to the film. They obviously bring something to the film, or else you wouldn't cast them. So it's of an oxymoron almost.
It 1,000% is. Yeah. And we see this throughout our industry where, you know, they'll say, well, we really like this person, but she's never been the star of a TV show before. It's like, well, bitch, you got to be a star of one show in order to become a star. Like Jennifer Aniston wasn't a star when you put her
Talk
in Friends. The whole cast were unknowns and then they became stars. So it to your point, is this oxymoron where they want somebody who they feel is strong enough, but at the same time, it can't overpower the story. They can't stand out too much where you can't conceptualize them as the character, right? Like, can't be too big of a name. It's very weird.
Well, it's also really funny too, just to like one more thing on this, because these studios make money regardless, right? Like the especially in like 1989, where TV and film are kind of the way we consume stories.
Yeah.
So like if you're a TV show like Cheers, like you're making money via commercial ads, right? And people are going to go see your film generally, because people were still going to the movies like in droves.
Well, yeah, and they didn't have the competitiveness of today's streaming market, right? Where you can see in TikTok and social media, you can watch content everywhere. So on the one hand, on the one hand, you can understand that studios have a financial stake and they want the movies to be successful, but it's again, hindsight is 2020. They were worried about the success of the movie. It was a huge success.
Huge hit.
And according to Kirstie Alley's memoir, during the filming, she started to fall for John Travolta. But she said, I'm going to be faithful to my husband. And
girl, didn't we all fall for John Travolta?
Could you blame her?
Oh, get out of here. Well, also, like, also not her life imitating art. We'll get to the story, the synopsis here in a second. Yeah. But, like, her character's cheating with her client.
So that's a perfect segue to say, class, if you have not seen this movie, or it's been a while, we will give you a little brief recap. It follows Molly, Kirstie Alley, as she navigates an unplanned pregnancy and the birth of her son, Mikey. So Molly becomes pregnant while having an affair with her manipulative, womanizing accountant client, Albert. Blech. Why?
I was so mad. I didn't want to say his name in this damn thing, because he is so foul.
Why is she messing with this man? He's the worst.
Like, the D must be great. friend suspect.
I'm not sure it was worth it. But the twist of the film is that throughout her pregnancy, we hear the thoughts and voice of her unborn child, starting from the sperm fighting to burst into that egg all the way through childbirth and childhood, hence the title, Look Who's Talking. So despite her baby daddy being a deadbeat, Molly decides to raise the child on her own. The child's voiced by Bruce Willis, funnily enough. And when she eventually goes into labor, she calls down a yellow cab and the cabbie, James, John Travolta, rushes her to the hospital. And then he's later mistaken for the father. And then he ends up being there when Molly gives birth.
James continues to show up in Molly and Mikey's life in different ways. And when James asks to use Molly's address to help his grandfather get into a fancy nursing home, she reluctantly agrees. In exchange, James becomes Mikey's babysitter. And then all of the elements of a normal rom-com. And so, is this a rom-com or is this like a family-style rom-com?
Yeah, I think it's a rom-com. It's funny that you even say family, because while technically there are the members of a family, it was considered to be a little raunchy. Like, the baby is making sex jokes. The baby is making sex jokes.
I mean, listen, and we'll get to this, but the sperm going through the fallopian tube is like...
I loved that stuff.
It was brilliant.
I was cracking up. The sperm are fighting. They're like, bitch, get out the way. Like, they're racing to the egg. Like,
literally,
it's funny.
It's very, very funny. So just some of the rom-com things that happen. Molly and James fall in love, but they find every reason to deny their feelings for one another. There's a healthy montage of Molly going on dates because, you know, patriarchy of it all. She's trying to find a father for Mikey. Yeah. James sabotages one of her dates. It continues with a hijinks and a car chase when the adults in the room, they forget where Mikey is. And Mikey randomly finds his way into a car that's being towed, and then they have to hunt him down in James's taxi.
That moment is when I was like, I am so old. I could not suspend my disbelief as the baby just walks out of the nursing home into this, gets into a car. The car is driving. Then he gets out of the car. He's roaming around the streets.
Oh my God, he's in the middle of traffic.
The cars are speeding by him. I mean, I knew he was going to be fine, but I was like, this is not funny. This is terrifying.
But I do, this is where the voice comes in that kind of makes it funny, where he's like, oh, what's this? And like, he's just kind of like going around. It's cute. It's cuter than it is funny.
I will say, I do love, he gets in this car that's being towed and he puts a breadstick in the ignition.
He does.
He's like, I know what I'll do. Like, I was watching, like, cracking up. I was like, why is this so funny?
So
Delon, since we both rewatched the movie for today's episode, I'm curious, what do you think worked about this movie?
Well, as we said, John Travolta being
hot is cool.
I mean, when they have him dancing in this movie class, and I was like, always have John Travolta moving his hips for whatever reason. It's just delicious. To get into the weeds a little bit, and I'd love to get your take on this too, Fran. I think one of the things that really works is the writing. I think they do a good job. Amy Heckerling is the director who we'll talk about in a second, but she does a great job of making James's character run into Molly a lot, right? Creating the grandfather storyline.
Yeah.
He gets mistaken as the father, and then they just put a shmata on him, and all of a sudden he's in the delivery room, right? She forgets her purse in the taxi, and then he comes to deliver her purse. So I think that worked really well.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, how do you get these two characters? They just meet in a shopping mall together?
Yeah, I mean, look, you can always create circumstances for them to run into each other. Not that I disagree that the writing is good. I think this is one of those things where, like, John Travolta really fucking carries every scene that he's in. Yeah. He's just
the charm.
So dreamy and so charming. Yeah. You could ask him to read the back of a cereal box and I would be like, like, he's so hot. And honestly, I forgot. Like, I know the Adele Dazeem version of John Travolta.
Oh god. I was just talking about Idina Menzel just to tell what that is. So at one Oscars in the last 10 years, Idina Menzel is a Broadway actress. She sang the song Frozen for the animated film Frozen. It was nominated for an Oscar. John Travolta gets up to
announce her
before she sings the song, and he can't say her name. Her name is Idina Menzel. And he said, Adele Dazeem. But then, like, it made her, it was a whole moment.
Oh, it was great.
Everyone was talking about
it. It was great. It was funny. And she's so talented and gracious. Like, she kind of rolled with the punches. I'm sure people have mispronounced her name a bajillion times. But I bring it up because that version of John Travolta, kind of like bumbling and bald and like weird plastic surgery and like wearing too much makeup, that's the version I have in my mind. But when you see him in this movie, or you go all the way back to like Welcome Back Cotter, you're like,
Welcome Back Cotter.
Oh, like, I get it.
You get it.
Like, like panty dropper, basement flooded, rip up
tight.
What am I thinking of? The carpet. I was trying to make an analogy about the basement being flooded, and my brain hole crapped out on me as I was talking.
Wait, what do you think? What do you think works?
I think John Travolta really works. I think the writing is fine. I think what also works is the premise is really funny. You know, this talking baby is funny, but to that same end, when I think about what doesn't work, I feel like the talking baby starts really strong and then it just they lose it. Like the baby by the end, I'm like, where? The baby's not saying anything.
The baby's kind of an afterthought, right? I get that. Like, the identity of the film kind of loses itself. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I really loved, you know, when the sperm was talking and the baby in the womb was talking, and we'll get into that. But like, I kind of wish there had been a little bit more of that. I feel like there was more fun to be had there. I also just feel like Kirstie Alley is not maternal to me. Like, she just doesn't, like, when she's holding the baby, it's like she's holding a sack of potatoes. Like, I don't see love. She's not like, I love this baby, this is my kid. And even the baby daddy of it all, like, she doesn't ask him for any money. She doesn't ask him for help at all. I read that Bruce Willis improvised a lot of the baby dialogue, and I can kind of tell. Like, it's sometimes the dialogue is just like, there's my hand, now I'm walking. It's like, you're just saying what's happening. Like, what are you feeling? I thought was interesting is that the studio originally wanted Robin Williams to voice the baby,
really?
But he was too expensive. Now, Robin Williams would have ate the fuck out of this.
Yo, Robin Williams would have been a star of that film. They should have paid for that. They should have paid for that.
Right? I mean, I think he might have overshadowed Kirstie and John Travolta in that respect.
100%.
But when you name the movie Look Who's Talking and the poster is the baby should kind of be the star. And I don't know.
I agree with you.
That. Well,
One of the things I had, and this is probably putting too much logic on it and not suspending my disbelief enough, but I'll have a comment about this later when we talk about something else. But like, there are all of these things that, like, her water breaks and then she gets into this taxi and then we get out and we see her whole body and there's no stain around her vagina. Now, listen, I know nobody wants to see somebody's pee, water break stain on the vagina, but don't make a big plot moment of her water breaking and then her get out and be dry as a bird, you know?
Yeah.
That's just, that's weird to me.
Also, dry as a bird. I don't know if that's the phrase, but okay.
Dry as a what? Dry as a desert.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. Listen, I have no room to talk about people's analogies. I couldn't remember the word carpet. It took me 5 minutes to get carpet out. And to your same point about the suspension of disbelief, if there's a payoff, I think we can get on board. Like James being mistaken for the husband. Like the funny payoff is that he ends up in the room with her, right? Like,
right.
So I think the water breaking of it all, like, yes, it is like a small detail, but I think you're right. Like it takes you out, at least us, as we're watching with a more critical eye, of course, because we're watching for the purpose of the podcast. But I felt like that throughout the movie. Again, the fact that she has this baby and she does not go to the father of her baby and say, give me some fucking money or help me out or I'm going to tell your wife. You know what I mean? Oof. Like she... That was just weird to me. And I also feel like the fact that we start the movie, we meet her and she's the other woman. She's the mistress. It makes her unlikable. You're like, I can't root for this girl. Like,
well, and I also like the idea that she still wants him and that she still thinks that they're going to be together after all of
and
that.
And he's he's so sleazy. Like he's really not good looking. He's very clearly like running game on her.
Manipulating her.
He's like, oh, I want to break up with my wife, but I just can't. She's...
Because what's the excuse?
She's bulimic. She's
I mean, that's funny. Not to laugh at people who are...
But what does that have to do?
It has nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
It has nothing to do with
it. But as the audience, you're like, why is she believing this? Why does she believe him? She's so dumb.
Well, and therein the comedy lies, right?
Right.
One of the things I took away from watching it was like, do you remember when movies were just like 90 minutes, when they were just an hour
this
and a half?
This movie felt
banged out.
This movie was shorter than a heart attack. It was over.
That would game quicker. Quick as
my
a heart
brain
attack.
Was like, bitch, not again. Let's get through it. I was like, what's fast? it was. I thought the same thing.
Before you
the
blink.
Pacing, because the movie starts, you meet her, all of a sudden she's pregnant. She was,
yes.
We didn't get to know anything about her or, you know, her wants, her hopes, her dreams, other than I really hope that he breaks up with his wife and then she's pregnant. It was, and then you
saw sperm.
She popped that baby out in 2 seconds. Even the labor was 2 seconds long. It was just, they were really at a clip.
Yes.
I wanted to ask, was there anything that surprised you during the rewatch?
I was surprised by John Travolta, as we keep, that's the theme of the podcast, but he has a line that I really loved. He's like talking to baby Mikey after he's out of the womb, and he's like, man, welcome to the world. He's like, isn't it crazy? You spend 9 months trying to get out and the rest of your life
trying to get back in.
He said the rest of your life trying to get back in. I was like, that is fucking... I rewound it and watched it again. Because I was like, did I hear that correctly? Because that's fucking funny.
It was funny, but also like so inappropriate. Like, why would you say that to a baby?
Absolutely.
That is so funny. I also just want to shout out the fact that Kirstie Alley, man, she's so... Despite the fact that they kind of set her up because her character inherently is the other woman and like not likable, she's very charming and fun to watch on screen. Mm. But like, man, her reputation in my mind is ruined because of how she was on Twitter. She was like super anti-vax, didn't believe in COVID and MAGA and blah, blah, blah.
Was she MAGA?
Oh, yeah, girl. She was. Wow. She was MAGA.
You never know.
Yeah, you
know
you really don't. And then I think about, you know, again, to see John Travolta in this way and know who he is now, which is a Scientologist.
God. Listen, don't they say never meet your heroes?
I mean, we're probably never. I'm never going to meet John Turturro. I don't have any plans to.
Right.
But it is just interesting. And I'm excited for us to do more episodes like this because it's easy to replace in your mind who a celebrity is with who you know them to be from, like, popular culture.
Right.
And it's kind of fun to go back and go, oh, you actually had some talent. Like, you brought something to the genre. And dare I say, like, this is a classic rom-com that a lot of other films have kind of, like, embodied that same vibe, you know, the enemies to lovers, we're raising a baby together. We've seen it a bajillion times, but like this kind of solidified it in many ways.
Right. And I mean, and it also is that genre of rom-com that is really, it's light. Mm-hmm. It's like you had a hard 40 hour week. You just want to go to the movies with your partner and eat some popcorn, laugh a little bit and say, we did something over the weekend. Yeah. So you have something to talk about when you go back to the office on Monday. And the 80s, I feel like, were that. The 80s were a lot of goofy kind of...
I miss that. I
you know what I mean?
I miss a goofy movie. Not the goofy movie with Goofy, but like a movie. That one too. It's cute. But like, you're right. Like the rom-com that was just like good, clean fun.
Yeah.
You know, I like movies that have a message. Don't get me wrong. But I think especially now, more than ever, we need movies that are just pure escape. And
please.
we really don't have that many of those anymore.
I think, you know, dare I say, the action movie is taking up a lot of that escapism space.
Yeah. But, and, you know, we could do a whole episode about that. But those action movies, that shit's propaganda. Yeah, the rah-rah America, that's what that is. You know, y'all are having a good time, but they are tricking your ass into thinking we're the greatest nation in the world, you know, out here saving people. We not saving
but
shit.
Read between the lines. Mm-hmm. So the film was written and directed by Amy Heckerling, who is also the writer and director of Clueless, another iconic film, which we should absolutely do an episode on.
Yeah.
Too many memes, too many cultural things not to acknowledge that. Heckerling would go on to write two sequels to Look Who's Talking, entitled Look Who's Talking 2, as Fran mentioned earlier, and Look Who's Talking Now, which she remembers from her childhood. Yo, Fran, Hollywood loves a sequel. Hollywood loves a sequel.
They do. Another thing that's not in here that I forgot to add is they also did a TV show based on this movie.
Did
it only
really?
Had one season. And it reminds me of the fact that Clueless had a TV show. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. It was not
different
that
era.
Good.
No, it wasn't. It was not good. But that was very much to your point about Hollywood loving a sequel. If it works, Hollywood wants to do it over and over and over again.
That. Give me the teat, milk and milk and milk.
I have not watched Look Who's Talking To or Look Who's Talking Now in a minute, but I remember them being so funny. I would really love to go back and just see if they hold up. But I kind of remember them being funnier than the original. I don't know. Am I just making that up? I don't know.
Well, I feel like it's funnier. You know why? Because Joan Rivers plays the daughter.
Well,
in Look Who's Talking Too.
No, she was originally going to be the daughter. She's the voice at the end of Look Who's Talking, and then it becomes Roseanne.
Oh,
another person who ruined her fucking image because of Twitter. But yes, Roseanne.
I'm so sad that
Roseanne is the baby.
That didn't work out for her.
Yeah, Roseanne is the baby in Look Who's Talking Too. I think what I love about Look Who's Talking Now, maybe this is just like the dog mom in me. I love that it's dogs talking. Like more movies with dogs talking, please.
I mean, I always feel like those are always successful. Always brilliant, but they had to go to dogs. Like,
yes,
if they wanted to do a third movie, what else? Another kid?
Yeah.
No, boring. We saw.
No, right? We've already seen it. So, you know, of course, Hollywood loves the sequel because it's about money. It is cheaper for the studio to produce a sequel, especially if a movie is successful. There's less of a marketing push. It's got that name recognition. There's no need to serve up something new and original when they can just give us a second or a third helping of whatever they put in our mouths before. We're looking at you, Marvel.
Also, would love to be in a Marvel movie. Call us,
thank
Mr.
you,
Marvel.
Please and thank you.
Call us. But you know what Hollywood doesn't love? A female writer director. So before directing Look Who's Talking, Amy Heckerling was best known for her 1982 directorial debut, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which we all know as an iconic film starring a young Sean Penn and Forrest Whitaker. Come on now. Like,
crazy.
Come on.
Star-studded.
Iconic. But this is wild. She was put in what's known as director jail after she did 1985's National Lampoon's European Vacation because it bombed. So once again, this idea of like, you did something, and this specifically happens to female directors, right?
Talk about it.
Male directors are allowed to make bad movies, and it happens, right? Like,
yes,
there's so many elements. It's honestly a wonder. Whenever I've been on set, it's like, holy shit, this many people are working together to make this thing happen. This is magical, right? So balls get dropped, you know, things happen in the world. You just never know how something's going to do. But for her, it kind of stunted her career. And there's a quote from her in IndieWire saying, "I knew that I didn't want to be a, quote, female director doing, quote, female projects because there's so damn few of those. Everybody I knew would be competing for them, and anybody that messed up would reflect badly on all of us."
There's so much to unpack here, because it's just way too much responsibility, first of all, to put on something that's so subjective, on something that's one project. And Fran, you and I talk about this a lot. It's like women, people of color, queer folks, trans folks, we have to be allowed to have mediocre, even bad films, TV show, art projects too. To your point, everyone else does. All these men are allowed to fail. Why can't we fail? Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's also about like not having enough practice telling our stories. And another quote from Amy Heckerling to really emphasize about the inequity of it all. She said, "It's a crapshoot. There's no telling if a movie is going to work or not," end quote.
Yeah.
Not every movie is a success. So on average, fewer of our, you know, Black, queer, whatever, stories are told, developed, produced, distributed. And if it's hard to strike gold and have a hit with a film, the math is telling me that we obviously are just going to have fewer hits and more mediocre to average bad art.
Yeah,
right?
I
think we just have to, we need some not reparations, but affirmative action.
Yeah, no, it's so true. It's really this crabs in a barrel mentality where, like, instead of demanding more from the powers that be, aka old white male executives, we end up criticizing and over critiquing our contemporaries and their work instead of saying, like, your work should reflect you and not all of us. When a man's film doesn't do well, we don't say all men, we gotta stop letting men direct.
We go, you know what, we go at, they pat him on the back and they go, better luck next time there.
You know what, next time, you know, here, to make you feel better, here's a few $100,000.
Totally.
Try again. Another quick factoid. There are only 3 women who have won the Best Director Oscar and a mere 8 who have ever been nominated. And it wasn't until 2010 that the first woman actually won, Kate Bigelow for Zero Dark Thirty, and it would be another 10 years before Chloe Zhao would become the second woman. She won for Nomadland in 2020, and Jane Campion, who won in 2021 for The Power of the Dog. So it's not that there aren't competent women directing films, right? Like,
right.
We talked about this when we did our Glow Up Awards episode. Awards are subjective, right? People are voting. And it's impossible to say, like, this movie is the best. Everybody's going to have their own opinion. But the reality is, because the voter base is so heavily male, it is going to be weighed in a way where people are going to relate to work by people that look like them. That's just the facts, you know?
It's so true. And I mean, not to throw more math at you, but like, there are more women than there are men in the world. So the idea that there just aren't enough women, I'm making this up, nobody said this, there aren't enough women directors to be nominated, I just don't think that's true. right?
Yeah. The playing field just hasn't been leveled in the sense where like women aren't getting the same opportunities, right? And right. It's like everybody has to start somewhere. It's that same thing I was talking about that when people say or executives say, oh, we really like her, but she hasn't done this before. It's like, well, you have to give everybody a first chance. Everybody right. has to do their first film. Everybody has to get their first time as the manager, right? If you're going to take it out of the Hollywood sphere, you need to just take a chance on people. And unfortunately, when you embody a marginalized identity, people feel like it's a bigger risk. Well, we've never done this before. Yeah, bitch, you never done it before because your biases are preventing you from seeing this person right. as competent. Give them a right. fucking chance.
Well, and what about mentoring, right? What about saying, yeah, we'll hire Francesca to do that thing, but we're gonna, you know, here's what the pay will be, because we're also gonna pay a mentor to like just guide her along in the process.
I would
and you
love
might
that.
Say no to that, but like that's it's an option, right?
Yeah.
It's like not saying no because you don't have any experience. It's saying, hey, let's invest in her and help her meet whatever need we think needs to be met, whatever, you know, metric we see.
Yeah.
So Amy Heckerling had a hard time getting those white male executives to see the light with Look Who's Talking. Warner Brothers, Disney, Orion Pictures all passed on the film before TriStar Pictures bought it. But the joke's on them, because the film would go on to gross $279 million
Holy
worldwide.
Shit.
Which is almost 40 times its $7.5 million budget. Yo, Amy, that's how you stick it to them.
Those are some huge, huge 40
numbers. 40 times
yeah.
the budget?
No, that's incredible.
Like, that's crazy. And Fran, I kind of felt like parts of it were giving pro-life propaganda.
Ooh.
Hear me out. I think it was because the film gave a specific voice, like we said, to the baby, right? But even when the baby was a fetus inside Molly's belly, there was like a consciousness and a thought, that thoughts that were happening throughout the gestation period. Like we literally were inside the womb and outside the womb with the baby's voice in our head. And that's the character we followed. Like you said, Bruce Willis was the voice actor, which I think was one of the funniest elements of the movie. But to me, it felt like they were trying to say a thing without saying a thing. Did you sense that at all?
You know, it's so funny. I really didn't read it that way. But now that you say it, I can definitely see it. I actually noticed that they mentioned abortion in the film, but not in like a fear-mongering or judgy sort of way. Honestly, the bar is in hell. I was like, abortion! Oh. I was the Leonardo DiCaprio meme. I was like, yes, they said it! You know, Molly says, I'm not going to have an abortion. And she doesn't say it like having an abortion is bad or she's
sure.
looking down on people. She just says, I'm not going to do it. And I was just surprised that it was mentioned as an option. And for me, that gives like slight pro-choice vibes. I felt like giving voice to the fetus was really funny. And like I said earlier, I wish they had kind of done more of it because it is a funny device. But it turns out that Amy Heckerling was actually very worried about giving the unborn baby a voice because of those possible pro-life undertones. In 1989, in an LA Times article about the film, she said, I didn't want to do a pro-life type of movie. I wanted to do something that was fantasy. So I didn't want to make a statement that when a baby is conceived, it's talking. A number of my girlfriends said, why didn't you wait until the fetus is 3 months old before he starts to talk? And I felt like if you're setting up a gimmick, you have to do it immediately. And then I decided I would avoid the whole issue if I made the sperm talk too. I loved the talking sperm.
She better listen. She better let me fix it. She better let me fix
it. I mean, it's clever. I never,
it is.
Again, I really didn't think that, but I appreciate that she gave it a little extra thought in that respect. And,
same.
You know, the way that I, you know, hindsight is 2020, but I would have said if she was really concerned about that, she could have leaned into it and done almost like a, you know, the cookie timer of like 3 months of silence, like ding, 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 ding.
Oh,
the baby
yeah.
is ready to talk now.
Yeah, that's lovely. That's a lovely solve. Yeah, I just feel like it was like again saying a thing without saying the thing,
mm-hmm.
by like giving the baby voice. We're like, it has a heartbeat, it has a soul, and not to poo-poo anybody's, you know, beliefs or experience or anything like that. But I just was like, it's a little surreptitious. It's a little, and that's also clearly telling you what my politics are.
Yeah.
Right. I'm averse to it.
Yeah,
but
I mean, look, we did the egg.
The sperm was a good solve.
The egg wasn't talking, though. You noticed that.
I noticed that. I really noticed that. I really noticed that. Because the wait, and also the egg comes out, the egg comes out of the, you know, it's out of the fallopian tube, or, you know, I don't know the female. I barely know my anatomy, okay?
You're like, I'm gay.
As Tuesday, okay? So the egg comes out, but it's like this really sad, love me, love me, love me music. And then like the sperm comes out and they're like, go get it. It's like Beach Boys. It's like, na, 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 na. You know, and you're like, why does the woman have to be the one who's like, love me, love me? And the sperm is like, let's conquer, you know?
I mean, look, I'm cracking up just thinking about it because it is so ridiculous. I will say, I thought that the fetus looked so scary at points.
It was huge.
It was weird. It was weird looking. It was weird looking. I thought it was funny. That's the 89 part of it where you're like, oh, this feels old. Mm-hmm. But it is still like fun. And again, the device is really clever. I just wish that they had really stuck the landing, so to speak.
You know, and what I do really respect about the way they designed the fetus and the womb and the sperm is that, to your point, if it was done in 2024, it would be all CGI.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure it would be beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm sure there would be a whole team around it. But these people were, I found myself being like, how the hell did they do that? Evidently, the fetuses were puppets that required 12 puppeteers. Some of them were hanging upside down to operate the fetuses while shooting the womb scenes. And the sperm were made of vinyl with fishing weights, tiny fishing weights on the front of them. I thought, it's giving Kraft, it's giving Francesca Rambo.
That is
you would gnaw on that.
Oh,
you would literally be like, how am I gonna do
it? I mean, look, I did think the fetus looked weird at times, but generally speaking, the inside of the womb was so cool. Like, it was like colorful and lights and like waving. It did kind of have that Jim Henson's Playhouse feel to it.
Well,
you know,
said.
It was ethereal.
Well, comp. That's good comp.
Ethereal. It was, you could hear the womb sounds, the way that it was like pulsating. It was very cool looking. And you're right. Today, it would be Uncanny Valley. They would make it look too, you know what it reminds me of? When I didn't watch The New Little Mermaid, but every time I saw clips of the fish, I was like, ew, I don't like how real those fish look.
Well, and it was weird that like the real people were there and the fish were there. And you're like, these two things don't fit together. And the hair is what I can't get behind.
Yeah.
The hair kind of floating. I'm like, oh, that looks so weird.
It's too weird. I think the puppetry of it all is a happy medium. Like, we know it's not real, but the fabrication makes it feel less bizarro world versus computer, where even when you know a lot of artistry has gone into those special effects, there's something about it that just takes you out because it's, I don't know, it's just too real. It's very strange.
God, man. Yeah. In another life, you're a special effects specialist. Ugh, in my head. Like, in another life, that is your
okay. You know what it, you know, job. What I, you know what it really is? I'm going to take it a step further. I'm the person who's in the studio doing the sound effects. You know, the person's like walking through the grass and I'm the person like touching the grass going, that's called a Foley artist. That's who I'm supposed to be.
Oh my God. There's a name for that.
Yeah.
There's always a name for
that. Yeah. Like when the person like bites into the, you know, the cheesecake, I'm like, I'm making all the little noises.
That's so funny. One of the things I want to get your opinion on, and I think this is, again, my politics bursting out of me. I think it's so fascinating that, you know, they depicted the entirety of the reproductive process, but they avoided actually showing any puss and any peen. Okay.
It's like, Dylan, it's, first of all, you are a horn dog. It's 1989. And it's a rom-com. Of course, I'm not going to show you any, like, actual sex.
Well, listen, it didn't have to be like John Travolta's ween, nor would it be. But I'm just saying, like, you're showing everything around it. We go to lengths to show, like, the reproductive process and the making out.
I think
and
that's
the body
intentional.
And all this stuff.
I think that's intentional. I personally, I like that she's with Albert and they're getting hot and heavy, and then it's cut to the sperm.
And it's a sperm.
Woo! Like, I think that that's funny. I think that that's the joke of it all.
I concede that. But I will also say, I think it's our puritanistic.
Puritanical.
puritanical. Thank you.
That's a $50.
It's our Christian tendencies. Mm-hmm. No, I really do think it is, because like we want to, it's giving, you know, the storks are where babies come from. Yeah. The Easter bunny is real, you know, instead of being like, no, kids, sex happens and you should not be afraid of sex, or not even kids, like people, humans, you're humans. Humans have sex, and it doesn't have to be a porno, but like it can be like a little more graphic, I think.
I want to see people fuck. No, I agree with you.
I don't want to ignore the realities of what it is.
I can see both sides. I don't remember what this film is rated, but if I had to guess, I'm going to say it was like PG, PG-13, because it's not sexual. And there's really like no cursing. There's no nudity.
There's like a kiss.
Yeah, it's pretty tame in innocent. That respect. So I'm not surprised that they don't get more sexual. I will say when Kirstie Alley and John Travolta start getting hot and heavy, there was a little bit. He flipped her over at one point. She was she was ass up, face down. I was like, okay. And she had
cringing. I'm crawling inside myself.
She had a look on her face. I mean, it was hot. It was hot. So I don't know. For me, it didn't take me out of the world. One thing that did take me out though, because it's a movie based in New York City. Where are the black people?
Yeah.
Where are the people of color? There was a secretary who had no name. She None. Was black. Then there was also a housekeeper who speaks some Spanish, and it's not subtitled. Where were the subtitles?
I appreciate no subtitles, actually. Like, but also, like, why she was an ass scene.
She was in one scene. I was like, where did she come from?
Right.
Very strange. So, but again, it's not that it's okay. But it is very much a time capsule of 89 where you could set a film in New York City and it is not a glaringly obvious error that there's no people of color with any like real lines or populating the world. Not even a black friend. Not even a friend.
Right. She had a friend. Kirstie Alley had a friend. She mm-hmm. could have been black. She could be the funny best friend. I mean, it wasn't a hot dog man.
Yes.
That was a
not even
of
a
color.
Biracial. Give me a biracial.
Half meet us halfway, literally. I really thought the same thing. And my solution for this is to look toward the reboot, because in 2010, it was rumored that the Fast and Furious producer was looking at rebooting the franchise. And so I say,
Okay, wait. You are jumping ahead to the fix.
You're right. Okay.
Let's first take a quick break and then do the fix when we come back.
Cute.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we are back. So now that we have rediscovered the film, Look Who's Talking, it's time for us to fix it. So Delon, please continue.
Right. So who would I cast in the franchise reboot of Look Who's Talking? Let's talk a POC baby, first of all. So now, you know, I want Keke Palmer in everything.
Give her her things.
I'm obsessed. I mean, come on, run for president, Keke, right? But I actually am going to give this one to Quinta Brunson as Molly. I think she could be really embody like the awkward comedy of it all, be really vulnerable. She's so charming. I just always want to like kiss her lovely cheeks.
That is great casting, because
and she's having a moment.
She's the moment is here, but
she is the moment.
There's also something about Quinta that just feels really earnest, like, and I feel like she would do such a great job in a rom-com. She's killing it on Abbott, but seeing her in a rom-com, yeah, it would be great, especially because like she kind of brought the sitcom back with Abbott. So like bring the rom-com back too. Like, girl, Hollywood needs you.
You're so right. She brought the sitcom back because it had really died. And that's a single cam sitcom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Abbott Elementary. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're so right. And it's that piece that, you know, Hollywood having a moment where they're saying, God, it's, you know, we're telling Black stories and we want to have a diverse cast. So like, you know, I think having a female Black lead that is having a moment is really smart. For James, I think James requires a lot of charm that Travolta embodied and a sexual appeal because, you know, I'm nasty. But also you have to have the comedy, right? Mm-hmm. So this might be a wild pitch, but I would love to see what Winston Duke does with this role.
Come on.
So, class, if you don't remember, Winston Duke.
Turn me round, bend me over, flip me, work me. Oh, yes.
Work the middle, work change position.
I will also say, you also made a really funny pairing because, you know, Quinta is 4 foot 11. And he is a giant.
He is. He's my size. And
the poster's hilarious. I can already see it.
Okay, totally. Totally. So Winston Duke, for those who don't remember, played M'Baku in...
Why did you have to say it like that?
Come on, that's a M'Baku. That's how they said it. You gotta be in the throat, you know.
Yes.
But he's also in Us, which is a Jordan Peele movie, which he was also brilliant in. I think he's just like, there's a clear humor to M'Baku, and he has an earnestness to him as well. But he's like a really strong actor, and also again, clearly, Fran and I want to lick his earlobes. So,
oh my god, he's so hot. And to your point, I would love to get to see him do something funny. Like, he's kind of funny in Us. Like, he's very charming and silly when he's like dancing around at one point.
Yes.
And that one moment in a freaking horror film, it's that thing where you're like, ooh, I would love to just see him play in that a little bit more and just get to have fun.
Yes. There's something to be said for like a person his size as somebody who, I don't know how tall Winston Duke is, but I'm about his, you know, let's say he's relatively my size. I think he's bigger. But they want you to play a leading man. They want you to play somebody that's imposing and whatever. So I think the comedy of it, of juxtaposing like him being like a really charming kind of goofy guy that you fall in love with, but also like having that kind of imposing body, I think is really would be a nice just juxtaposition.
Yeah, I love that.
For the voice of baby Mikey, I would give it to not a person of color, but I think it would be great. Paul Rubens, who we lost, who was Pee Wee Herman. Mm-hmm. I think his voice, because you have to have like something really quirky, I think, for the baby's voice. If I couldn't get Pee Wee Herman, I would go with something like extremely crazy and different and low, like a Ving Rhames,
which
could be
funny.
Really funny. Isn't that funny? Last choice is Michelle Wolf. I think her, that like kind of shrill thing she does with her voice would be so funny as baby Mikey.
Michelle Wolf would be so funny. And I think, you know, again, I liked Bruce Willis in the original, but because he's not a comedian, I feel like the parts suffered when he was doing the improvisation. So I think a Michelle Wolf would be really smart because she's very funny and she could improvise her ass off. And her voice is iconic and so interesting.
Yes.
It would really like breathe life into the baby and like really make it stand out as a character, which again, I think the original film kind of lacks in that respect.
Where's her animated TV show? Like, that voice needs to be in an animated TV show, right?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know. She definitely, I mean, she's still very successful and has like a number of stand-up specials. But she definitely had like a moment where she was everywhere. And I don't know her. Like, we've met a few times, but I would definitely could see her voicing a cartoon character. That does seem right up her alley.
It seems like low-hanging fruit. So if I were to fix the plot, if I were to, you know, totally redo the plot, I would make it queer, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I would say nothing about it being queer. There would be no like coming out story, no like queer trauma. It would just be these two people happen to be queer people. And it's just another rom-com. But I would make it two women. I would have James be Jamie, and she's an Uber driver. And I would have Molly be somebody. I want these people to be older women. Mm-hmm. I want them to be older women, and I kind of want them to be adopting a baby. I want there to be like another story around it, right? Maybe the person that Molly was with was cheating, but maybe they just got divorced. Maybe it was a conscious uncoupling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then they find each other on the way to go pick up the new baby. The casting. So I know the world would give Leslie Jones the role of Jamie or one of the roles, and like Leslie, get your bag, get it. But I would love to see a pairing of Wanda Sykes as Molly, mm-hmm. and I would love to see Sarah Ramirez as Jamie. And I want to give Sarah Ramirez all the things. They deserve yes. all the things because mm-hmm. they're so underused, and I love their politics.
And give them a singing moment.
So talented.
What?
Oh
just
my
have
God,
them sing.
Guys,
have them sing at some point.
Have you heard them sing? They are ridiculous.
Incredible.
The voice
incredible.
Is dumb. So those are my fixes. What do you got, Fran?
I love that. So we kind of had some similar thoughts. I really hate the cheating with the client storyline. It really made me dislike Molly from the jump. So instead, similar to you, I would love a lesbian couple that is trying to have a baby, maybe going to the sperm bank. Funny thing of the sperm all fighting for a chance.
That could be Fran. Well done. Just like in the bank with all the voices of the sperm everywhere.
The sperm in the bank, like going through the book. I don't know what the process is, but I feel like that could be a really funny scene. Another thing that I think could be interesting to kind of flip the rom-com on its head is what if it's a hetero couple that decide that they're going to have a kid together, but they're just friends. They're like, you know what? I've always wanted to have a kid. Maybe they're both pessimistic about romance. Of course, they will eventually fall in love, right? But maybe they decide, or, you know, the twist is that they don't, and they decide to just raise this baby as friends. I think that could be really fun. If we're going to stick with the original enemies to lovers plot, I like a one night stand, even though we've seen that before with like Knocked Up. It would also could be funny if the mom could hear the voice of the baby and no one else could. I think that could be interesting. Ooh. Like, it just as an added complication, I always think it's funny when like, you know, in these movies where someone has like an imaginary friend, like what was that movie about?
Drop Dead Fred.
Exactly.
My theater director from high school was in that movie.
Shout out to them. I love that concept, right? Where like you can hear the thing and people are like, who are you talking to? And they're like, nobody. Like there's just something very funny about that.
It's a mix of your ideas, mix of Look Who's Talking and what women want or what men
want.
Like when
you
hear the thoughts of,
Yeah, there's something really funny about that. Okay, and then my casting pitches. Molly, Jessica Williams. She's beautiful. Ooh. She's funny. I absolutely loved her in Love Life. She has great acting chops. The camera loves her. There's just something so like natural and relatable about her. She has like that maternal vibe without being like, I don't know. She's like a hip, cool mom. Like she's stylish. I would see her in like very I'm a cool mom. And like cute pregnancy outfits. I just think she would slay that type of thing. Okay. If I'm going the lesbian angle, wild pitch, Raven Simone. Why have we not seen Raven Simone in a fucking
Is she
rom-com?
Difficult to work with? Because why is she not all over the place?
She's so fucking funny. And like she just... Anytime I've gone back and watched That's So Raven, I'm like, this girl's hysterical. She's a star. She's like, she's got like the I Love Lucy, like slapstick thing. Like her water breaking in a cab, like going all over the place. I think that would be hilarious. If I'm going the later in life thing, which could be another interesting way of, you know, a woman doing IVF, having a, you know, late in life pregnancy, Maya Rudolph could be interesting.
Oh, full stop. No. Maya Rudolph. No, I'm saying yes. I'm saying no, but I'm saying yes.
Why?
No, I'm saying yes. No, I'm saying Maya is it. If they don't cast Maya Rudolph in a reboot of this, she is it. She's the one.
She would be so brilliant. Fucking funny in this. Okay, and then for James, Jay Ellis from Insecure. So handsome. So charming. Has a little bit of a fuckboy vibe, right?
Oh, but still has the charm of innocence and earnestness.
He has the charm. He has the charm.
Yes,
okay,
girl.
Another person that I think has the charm and could be a potential Daily Show reunion if we do Jessica Williams, Hasan Minhaj. Fine.
Why do I have the biggest crush on Hasan Minhaj? He's smart. He's so beautiful.
Ugh. Oh, he looks like a Disney prince, right?
And you know what? I kind of got him so sexual on this podcast. But I feel like Hasan Minhaj would be like, oh, you're not done yet? Don't worry. We'll keep going. Right?
Well, I have not.
He's going to make sure you get yours.
I have not thought about him that way. But sure. I love the idea that he is a generous lover.
Yes.
And then my last pitch, someone that I have not seen in a rom-com but would love to, is Steven Yeun. He is so charming.
I love. Why am I swooning over every man?
Because I picked good. Because you know why? Because I thought if we had John Travolta in the original, we need to match that energy. We need somebody who is
Steven Yeun,
very sexy, charismatic, charming. And again, we haven't gotten to see him. I know he's funny. We see hints of funniness in everything that he does, but let's just let him go there. I think that would be really fun. And then my last pitch is in the lesbian version, if we were going to do Raven Simone with somebody, Abby Jacobson from Broad City.
Oh, I love Abby. That's good casting.
She's funny. She's nerdy. She's awkward. She's silly. And then for the baby, I think Wanda Sykes, I think, would be an amazing voice for the
Wanda
baby.
Would kill it.
Wanda would kill it. And then I also...
Let's just put Wanda in it no matter what.
I think Wanda as the baby would be really funny. Another person I think would really kill it for the baby voice is Jim Gaffigan. He's very he's very funny. He does like family comedy. He has kids.
Yeah.
He's got a bunch of kids. There's something about him... it's like curmudgeon-y, but still like approachable that I feel like is funny as a baby.
Curmudgeon is so good because it's like the way he talks, you're like, he's perpetually uncomfortable.
And so which is
like,
a baby.
Which a baby to be, the one just like, everything hurts.
What am I doing here? Oh my God, this is awful. How do I, whatever.
You know what? Actually, I was going to say Larry David would be a good option, but Larry David is just Larry David.
Larry David as the voice of a baby would be hilarious. I think that would be funny too. Oh my gosh. Well, class, look who's talking. Did we fix it? Who would you cast in a reboot? Tell us on Instagram at fixitpod or send us an email. lemmefixitpod@gmail.com.
And now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, The Glow Up, where we give props to those who turn themselves around without our help. Fran, I think you should go first because I'm going to save the best for last.
Oh, okay.
I'm kidding. No.
Well, my glow up goes to fur. So I'm not somebody that wears fur, but fur is really having a moment because of this so-called mob wife aesthetic taking all over on TikTok.
What is the internet? What is this stuff?
This happens all the time where people are like, well, and let's be specific, not just people. White people. They're like, now the clean girl aesthetic, now the mob wife aesthetic, the like trad wife, granola girl, van life, whatever. I have this whole theory about this idea of white people lacking culture and needing to find culture in other places.
In their culture.
Other places, right? Like sports teams or, you know, the political figures or musicians or guns.
This is my brain breaking.
Yeah.
Like Fran, Sometimes I don't understand why people in general, but why people are fanatical about mm-hmm. things.
I think that that's what it is.
That makes so much sense to me.
I think that's what it is. And I think the mob wife aesthetic is a perfect example where it's like, I need a cultural identity because the girls have been fighting about this. Because the Jersey Shore ladies, the Italian girls, they're like, my culture is not a costume. We're like, oh, you get appropriation now.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, but I see the cornrows, girl. I see the cornrows.
Right. You had them door knocker earrings on and the long nails. Well, we were ghetto when we were doing it, but not when you doing it. Got it. So because of this mob wife aesthetic, fur is having a moment. There is enormous spikes in sales of fur. And again, I'm not a fur person. If you're going to do it, try to do vintage. I mean, they do such terrible things to these animals in order to make clothing out of them.
Well, and girl, be ready for the red paint because, you know, PETA's coming for your ass.
Well, and okay? You definitely run that risk. But the faux fur has gotten a lot better.
And faux fur is really cute and feels real.
A lot of it looks, I feel like there was a time where faux fur looked really cheap and tacky, mm-hmm. but it has mm-hmm. gotten better to the point that, like, you know, there's some that are expensive. If you're going to buy it and you can splurge, I say go for it so that it lasts longer and it doesn't feel like plasticky. To your point, it feels real-ish and it doesn't smell and feel like dry. I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Get a little oil of Olay up in there and give it a little sheen.
Wait, I just I had a whole reaction because I remember what real fur actually feels like.
Yeah.
Like even if you take the lining off and you actually feel like the skin, you can feel the skin of the animal, which is like, ugh. But it also makes me go back to our Lizzie Borden episode where we talked about how she took her furs to didn't she get some cyanide or something?
Yeah.
And when they were like, she got some cyanide and she was like, cleaning my furs.
Yeah.
With cyanide? That's crazy.
Yeah. I just remember that when my step grandmother passed away, she had a fur and I had never seen a real one before. And it was like a neck piece and the guy's little head was on there.
I hate it. I hate it so much. Yeah, oh, that, I don't
know.
Want?
I was like, why would you want the head still on here? It was
it's taxidermy. Why would you ever want that? Why was that ever in style?
I don't know. It was very strange. I will not be rocking any fur. I will say when I was at Sundance, one of the girls in our group had like a little fur headpiece thing and it was so cute. I had something similar and I lost it in my move, and every day that I saw her wearing it I was just like, oh, I'm so mad that I lost it, because it was so cute. It was just there is something about it that feels very like regal and extra,
expensive,
extra. You're taking up space. So fur, whether you love it or you hate it, you can't deny it. It's having a glow up.
So my glow up this week is you know, not in the positive, good for you girl kind of vibe. This week, my glow up goes to shaming parents into responsibility.
Okay.
And the disclaimer, I'm not a parent. So y'all can come for me because I don't have kids and I don't know what, you know, especially teenage kids who are going to have their own agency and teenage kids lie and like whatever, you know. But over the weekend, there's a TikTok that went viral of these teenage girls in a Sephora
with the blackface.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So these teenage girls, they were putting on blackface in Sephora. Why was it blackface? Because they were using makeup testers that are traditionally used for by darker skin tones. So the person who shot the video said in the video caption, this group of teenagers and their moms come in and go to the makeup section and use samples for blackface whilst giggling and making animal sounds. Then a staff member approaches these mothers who were just standing around. And I guess people were taking photos or something, but the staff member was shocked that people were documenting this. She was like, you want to document this? The mothers were really offended and wanted the person to, the video has been taken down, but people have made, you know,
well, didn't the moms try to get the lady from Sephora fired?
Did they?
They were mad about, they were mad that the woman said, don't do this. Do not do this.
That's ludicrous. But I do think, you know, is this the fault of the kids? No, I think the parents standing right by should be shamed into doing something.
I mean,
right?
I think why not both? I think all of them. And the gag's on you when your face starts breaking out because your dumbass was putting on the tester. Don't put the tester on your face.
Not the tester.
You hate black people that much. You're like, ha ha ha. Wow. I'm going to show you. I'm going to use this bottle that's been sitting out here and used by God knows who and rub it all over my face.
Oh, God.
Screw disgusting. Up your life and your skin.
Well, because you know these videos are, they're going to find out who these people are.
Oh.
And they're going to be all over the internet.
Oh, I've seen the minute you started describing the details, I've seen this video hundreds of times on my TikTok timeline. They will absolutely find out who these girls are.
The internet is unparalleled. So that's one instance where I think these parents should be shamed. Again, like you said, Fran, the girls should also be shamed because this is terrible. But I also want to bring up Jennifer Crumbly, who's the mother of Ethan Crumbly, who was a mass shooter in Michigan in 2021 who killed 4 people and injured 7. So Jennifer Crumbly was found guilty. She hasn't received her sentence yet. Found guilty of involuntary manslaughter for her negligence around preventing her son from committing this act. So there were all these things that could have happened that didn't happen. Jennifer and James, his parents, bought the gun as a pre-Christmas gift, but they also, Jennifer took him to the gun range shortly before the shooting. Then he drew this crazy drawing on his geometry homework of someone being shot with blood everywhere. So then the guidance counselor called in the parents to have a conversation.
Oh,
and they had a 15-minute conversation. Then the parents say, no, we want him to stay in school. They went back to work. That same day is when he shot the school up. I don't want, to poo-poo. Like I always say, I don't want to poo-poo anyone's experience. I don't want to wish ill on anybody, but somebody needed to be held responsible other than that kid, because there were too many signs telling us that
people were trying multiple times to say something. Y'all need to step in.
We're
worried about him. The way he's behaving is, and you know, the thing about guns is if you have a gun in the home, it ups your chances of someone
always
being killed with that gun. And I don't
more
understand.
More often a child.
More often a child. And the idea, again, it's one of those things where this is always difficult because some kids are just bad, right? Like some parents try everything they can and the kid still fucks up. You know,
and your kid is like from Omen. Okay.
You have to acknowledge that sometimes there's that movie. I read the book. We need to talk about Kevin.
We need to talk about Kevin.
That book, that is the best birth control out here. Read that book because you just don't know. Okay. And
it's
important to say that. But in this instance, these parents at every turn were like, no, we're going to give you a gun. We're going to teach you how to use the gun. We're not going to lock it up. We know that you're drawing violent images.
You asked them both to take him to a doctor because he was having hallucinations, seeing ghosts and stuff.
God.
And they were like, shut up. They both literally shoved it off. And I was like, yo, so you are responsible for this. You had so many opportunities to help this kid and you just didn't.
Yeah, there definitely has to be consequences. The other thing that you and I have talked about offline, I think more than on the show, we also need to start thinking about preventative stuff. Because the reality is these school shootings keep happening and there's not enough of a deterrent. At this
Clearly.
Point, it feels like people are doing this because they want to become infamous. I read something about the fact that it's better when these mass shootings happen to not publicize who the person is because they're usually copycats. Like these are people who are disturbed and they want the attention. And so we have to avoid giving them the thing that they want and encouraging other people to follow in their footsteps. But we have to talk about gender-based violence because a lot of times these dudes are beefing with their girlfriends, are beating up their mothers, grandmothers, committing sexual violence. They're doing all these signs that show you at some point I'm gonna escalate this violence. And we culturally are just ignoring it.
Yeah.
And so again, I agree with you that parents should be held responsible, but it's putting a Band-Aid, pardon the pun, on a bullet hole, right? Like it's not fixing the actual issue.
I think you're right. And I think something to pull another thread that you mentioned, I talk about men being broken a lot because I am a living through the male experience. And I do think that we don't help men enough.
No.
And I think the burden often lands on women, on mothers, on wives, on girlfriends to help men. And that's not to say that they shouldn't be there as partners or as family members, but I wish that we would have a collective societal conversation just about how we help men, because it's not women shooting up these schools. I guess there was one woman.
It's not that it doesn't happen, but I think to your point about helping men, men are not socialized to feel comfortable expressing anything other than anger. If you feel sadness, if you feel fear, those things are seen as a weakness. And unfortunately, when you tamp those things down, they don't go away. Like, they are just going to explode at some point. And I think I shared this article with you. The article was something along the lines of, men have no real friends and women are paying the price for it.
Oh, you did send that to me. That was a really good article.
I will put it in the show notes. It was basically about the fact that because men are not socialized to share with each other, their version of community building is like watching sports and drinking alcohol and talking about who they're fucking. They're not talking about like their fears and their dreams and stuff like that. And so what ends up happening is we have a society of very lonely men. Very, very lonely. And then the only way that they know how to exert these feelings is through aggression. So you're right. We definitely need to have more space for men to talk to each other and talk about their feelings. And I'll also add, not be shamed for it. There are some women pushing that shit too. I want a manly man.
A lot.
I don't want you drinking a fruity drink. I don't want you crying.
Not a fruity drink.
Things are gendered is bonkers.
Well, I just finished this play, which I've talked about on the pod before, that is just about platonic male love. The playwright came and did a talk back, and it's just about these two men who are fathers who we don't see very often. We don't see male love with their kids very often in media, TV, film, or on stage. But he talks about not seeing two men who were very intimate, who were caring for each other, very vulnerable, and looking each other in the eye, unless they're going to kiss or they're going to punch each other in the face. And he's like, I wanted to write something that really depicted that. And I knew that the audience would come in and they would go, God, either these two men are going to end up fighting because it's a black character and white character over race, and or they're going to end up making out. It's neither of those things. So he subverts the audience expectation completely. But I just hope and pray that we have more conversations about platonic male love, because I think men need that, clearly.
Listen, the patriarchy hurts all of us
deeply,
and the minute we can accept and admit that,
I know,
the sooner we will get to dismantling it so that we can all reap the benefits.
And so y'all can get closer to dismantling it. We're gonna wrap up this show. So as usually, we want to hear from you. Whose fan casting of Look Who's Talking did you like better? Mine? Yes. or maybe you'd like to suggest a TV show, celeb, or brand that we could fix in the future episode. Hit us up on Instagram @fixitpod or email us at letmefixitpod@gmail.com.
And do not forget that we have a YouTube channel. Visit youtube.com/@fixitpod to watch this week's episode and see our lovely faces. And if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a rating on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app. I'm Francesca.
And I'm DeLon, and this was
Okay, well, y'all know the name of this podcast.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.